Good morning. I would invite forward Pat Kinraid to light our chalice as we honor International Women's Day. Gather, come close. Look to this light and be reminded of the sun that greets each morning. Look to this light and know that it has enough warmth to kindle all. Look to this light by which we seek to find our own truths. Look to this light, a beacon for those who are lost and who are hurting. Gather, come close now. By this light, we will hold one another. Thank you, Pat. I'd like to invite forward children of all ages and the young at heart for our story this morning. Some are very eager, which is great. We're going to learn a new song, and we're going to sing it together. I'm hoping that some of you folks who are sitting up here can help me in teaching everybody else, but mostly helping act it out. So today we're talking in church about what it means to be in right relationship with one another, and what it means to be a leader. Now, sometimes when we talk about leaders, we talk about them like in the game Follow the Leader. But that game, to me, has never seemed like a great teaching tool. It seems to demand one person in front, one behind. There's an old story I heard once about a French king. The story is told really similarly for a French radical, so it really depends on your politics. He wasn't feeling like he knew what his job was as king. He knew that kings were supposed to be leaders, to lead their people towards, well, something. But he didn't know where to take the people, and he was getting more and more frustrated with not knowing what to do, especially when he was supposed to be the leader. One day the king was sitting in his study, and he heard a crowd of people streaming past his window. He said, "Oh, there go my people. I must find out where they're going so I can lead them." Leadership isn't rushing to the front of the line to stand in front of everyone that's now behind you. Leaders work together and stay together. So the song we want to teach this morning comes from the Jewish tradition, sung at Hebrew Bible or Hebrew camps and social justice song circles for many years. I learned it a few years ago in Louisville, Kentucky, at UUA General Assembly. I learned it from some young ministers who were leading a workshop on Ladies of the Cloth, Young Women Ministers in Unitarian Universalism. They said that they had learned the song from their interfaith work with other young religious activists, and that they would sing it whenever they came together with different communities, especially if there were marginalized and privileged groups involved. The song has four lines, and I'm going to put the words up on the screen, because otherwise this is going to prove really hard. I'm hoping we can act it out by getting into pairs. Will you pair with me? Would that be okay? Okay. Do you folks want to get in pairs too and stand up and join me? No, you'd rather sit? That's cool too. You're invited to stand in the aisles and join us if you'd like to. Song has four lines. I'm hoping, so people at the front with me, let's line up and we're going to face the congregation. Okay? So we're going to start with one person standing in front of the other person, and we'll sing the first line. Do not walk in front of me, I may not follow. Okay? Do not walk in front of me, I may not follow. And now we're going to switch places. Do not walk behind me, I may not lead. And then we're going to stand side by side. Just walk beside me and hold my hand. Together we'll be walking in the path of Hashem. Okay? Everybody feel like they got a handle on it? Fantastic. Okay, can we do that again? Fantastic. I love volunteers. And do not walk in front of me, I may not follow.
Do not walk behind me, I may not lead. Just walk beside me and hold my hand. Together we'll be walking in the path of Hashem.
Once more.
Do not walk in front of me, I may not follow. Do not walk behind me, I may not be. Just walk beside me and hold my hand. Together we'll be walking in the path of Hashem.
Thank you very much. Today's service about International Women's Day may well be an emotional one for some people. It's a sad truth that many of us have experienced trauma, or at least profound pain, by virtue of a culture that has accepted violence against women for too long, and violence against people of color more readily still. Anna, the choir, and I are all offering personal and honest reflections, but we recognize that those reflections may have a triggering effect for some folks. If we want to be effective allies to people who have been wounded, we must be able to hear their stories. If we want to talk about the hard things of the world, the problems that are rising around us, we can't shy away from naming them. Today we will strive to do that naming in a way that doesn't cause unnecessary wounds or unnecessary hurt. But if there is a point at which you feel uncomfortable and want to step out, know that you are not alone. I'll be available after the service to anyone who wants to talk, who wants to share more of where they come from, how the stories may have affected them. If we are to encounter the world, the church can't always be a safe space. But together we can make it a brave space, a space of courage where we support one another completely. If you've ever looked in the back of your hymnal, you may have noticed that there's an index of all the tunes, the melodies that our hymns use. You'll find that sometimes the same tune may be used by 3 or 4 different hymns. The tune that this song, Love Will Guide Us, uses was arranged by Betty Wilder and was named Olympia for the very first female minister recognized in the United States by an established denomination. The Reverend Olympia Brown, a Universalist minister ordained in 1863 in Racine, Wisconsin. The lyrics were written by the singer-songwriter Sally Rogers, and this song first appeared on her album, What Can One Little Person Do? I invite you to join me, rise in body or spirit as you are willing and able, and sing number 131, Love Will Guide Us. On this day and through our dark nights, let us be guided by love.
She said, I can't sleep. I'm so tired. When I was little, she was always there in school, 1 year ahead, leading the way. But now she'd fallen behind. I didn't see her much. She was in the alternative program, trying to catch up, just trying not to drop out, so that she could get on with making herself a life. We'd never been close, but something about sitting in the warmth of the sun with the feeling of the grass beneath us and the calm of the wait for the bus made her decide to tell me. I can't sleep. I'm so tired. I feel guilty for leaving her there alone. But I just had to get out. I couldn't take him anymore, you know. I nodded, but I didn't know. I was headed home to parents who kept me safe, not away from a father I needed to protect my little sisters from. Our little sisters grew up in the same classes. They shared the same first name. And yet their lives couldn't be more different. There are so many moments in others' lives that I do not know. There are so many women with stories that they will never tell or I will never hear. I think a lot about the little evils done in the name of two little words, lost cause. What happened to her and her sister? That was the last time I saw her. The situation was pretty grim. The odds were not in her favor. I met her story as a teen with the usual impassive feigned nonchalance, ignoring the quickening of my heart, telling me, this is important, listen, do something. I wasn't mean, but I wasn't kind, and I wasn't brave. I was at least as afraid of her as I was afraid for her. I felt more fear of reaching out than I felt guilt at doing nothing, and I did nothing. It is easy to justify my actions. I was just a kid, but so was she. It wasn't fair. Fighting injustice is not for the faint of heart. Confusing trails, uncertain payoffs, and infinite risk. But feminism is about her and about all of us. Those whose stories I don't understand. Those that I don't know. Those who scare me. We are all in this together, for each other. No matter how many lost causes we must welcome in, or we are all lost.
These are the words of Beatrice Johnson Reagan, one of the founding members of Sweet Honey in the Rock, who wrote this song and published it to be sung by choirs and people all over the land. This song was written in honor of Ella Josephine Baker, who was a leading African-American civil rights and human rights activist beginning in the 1930s. She was a behind-the-scenes activist whose career spanned 5 decades. The lyrics of Ella's song are based on the lessons I received from the teachings of Ella Baker, writes Beatrice. The refrain for Ella's song was based on a speech in which she talked about the killing of civil rights workers in Mississippi in 1964. She said, James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Swimmer were killed while investigating the burning of a church whose members had allowed it to be used for voter registration. And when they went missing, a cry went up from the movement and from people throughout the U.S. to find them. During the search, they began to drag the rivers of Mississippi. And though they did not turn up the 3 bodies, they found other bodies of black men who had been killed that no one had looked for. James Chaney was black and a native of Mississippi. Andrew Schwimmer and Michael Goodman were white and Jewish from New York. During this search, Rita Schwimmer, the wife of Andrew, said that had the civil rights team been all black, we probably would never have been able to force such a massive search. The bodies were found in a crude earthen dam. The families of Schwimmer and Goodman asked that their sons be buried with James Chaney. It did not happen because at that time, cemeteries in Mississippi were segregated. Although these men were massacred together, it was against the law for them to be buried together. Ella Baker made this statement, and I knew I had the refrain from the song, or for the song rather, until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until this happens. We invite you to hear the song again, knowing the story that, of its whereabouts.
Until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. I was in Akron, Ohio, the first time I heard those words, the first time I heard that song, our anthem. The first time I heard that story from Ella Baker, of the civil rights workers who had gone missing, the first time I heard of bodies cast into the river. I sat there and my mind traveled home, north of the border. I couldn't escape the thought that in the north of British Columbia, there is a highway that flows like that river. A highway of tears, with the bodies of murdered and missing Indigenous women. A river of sorrow and trauma of forgotten peoples cast aside. I sat in that room, in that workshop, and I felt myself grow cold. I've been haunted by that image ever since. I've been haunted by that image, but I've been haunted too by my awareness of the story that Rita Schwimmer told was probably true here as well. That if white women had gone missing on those desolate roads, that the government's response, our response, my own response, would probably have been different. And that's unsettling for me. I grew up a pretty ardent feminist in a household and community of ardent militant feminists. The injustices of the patriarchy were so apparent everywhere I turned, from sexualized violence to wage gaps to full access to employment and education. I went to a liberal school and to a UU church and was taught by strong women committed to the cause. In high school, I marched to take back the night. I went to university, became a sociology major and a women's studies minor, and marched some more. I imagine this path may have been true for some of you in your own experience, or in the way in which you tried to raise your children or support the community of children around you. This past summer, I finally relinquished my favorite t-shirt. It was more open space than fabric by that point. On it were the words, "This is what a feminist looks like." I got it in my first week at Queen's at a sidewalk sale 21 years ago, a gift from a partner raising funds for the Campus Women's Center, the Gray House. I have never gotten so many comments and strangers talking to me as I did when wearing that shirt. Some would just smile as they went by. Some would stop to chat. Some would ask where they could get one. But almost universally, they would tell me it was nice to see a man wearing that shirt. I had women friends who wore that shirt, and it earned them only ire. I worked at the Gray House in the Sexual Health Resource Center in the Human Rights Office. I trained people to offer support in the domestic violence courts. I took the learnings from my academic classrooms, from the community of women I came from, and the organizations that I belonged to out into the world in which I worked and lived. And I always thought that I was doing the right thing. The poet and writer Maya Angelou is credited with having said, "I did then what I knew how to do. Now that I know better, I do better." I did then what I knew how to do. Now that I know better, I do better. I thought I knew better. I thought I knew better than people, other people, and I thought I did better. And I wonder now, how much did I really know? How much do I know now? For the last 3 years, I've preached on International Women's Day, and each time my focus has been on the achievements of women, mostly of Unitarian women. It's not a hard thing preaching International Women's Day about the achievements of Unitarian women. Y'all are a pretty impressive lot. I have found this year that it has been much harder for me to get to that place of celebrating accomplishments past. It's not just watching the American news and the American electorate's choice to put a proud perpetrator of sexual assault in the White House, who has called his opponent a nasty woman. I found in recent weeks and months of news, I've been wondering, how much progress has really been made? In the past week, two judges have been fired or may soon be fired for saying that sexual assault victims should have kept their knees closed, or that being unconscious is no guarantee that one didn't consent to sex with a stranger. Those are both in Canada. The YWCA reported 460,000 cases of sexual assault a year in Canada, of which only 3.3% are reported. And the Globe and Mail has been working on a piece of investigative reporting over the last 20 months that raises serious issues for victims of sexual assault across this country and for all of us. They called the series, Will the Police Believe You? In their report, they offer the following. When Canadian police officers complete an investigation, they give it a closure code to show the outcome. One of those codes is unfounded. Unfounded indicates the investigating officer does not believe a crime was attempted or occurred. Once an allegation is categorized that way, it effectively disappears from public record, as though it never happened. In Canada, on average, police dismiss 1 out of every 5 sexual assault reports as unfounded, meaning police believe the crime didn't happen. Larger cities tend to have lower unfounded rates, with Winnipeg having a mere 2%, while western provinces, and particularly BC, tended to have lower rates in the low to middle teens. Of that, we might feel glad, BC's rates being lower. But 5 minutes north on that road is the very worst place in Canada to make a complaint of sexual assault if you expect to be believed by police. According to the Globe and Mail, Central Saanich has the worst rate in the country. More than 60% of complaints are found to be unfounded. 5 minutes up that road, 60% of reported sexual assaults don't wind up in the justice system because police simply don't believe it happened. I'm raising a son now. He's 11 months old. Whip smart. So cute. I also had a foster son when I lived in Kingston. He recently celebrated his 22nd birthday. I want to think that I raised a feminist boy who became a feminist man. I want to think that I will raise Rowan to be a feminist boy who will become a feminist man, assuming he identifies as a man when he grows up. I want to believe that if they became police, that they would believe complaints, that they would investigate. I want to believe that if they became a judge, that they would know that it's wrong for anyone to have sex with someone who can't communicate their consent and who wouldn't shame women being sexual. I want to believe that my sons, knowing better, will do better. There is a highway in northern BC. For years, police were told about an epidemic of missing Indigenous women. For years, politicians were told. For years, the media was told. For years, we were told. And for years, nothing was done. And I wonder, did we not believe them? Did we not hear them? I found this a hard Sunday to figure out what I wanted to say. I find myself feeling like I'm stuck in a hard, sad place. I find myself being and identifying with a community. I find myself wanting to tell people to be better. Just be better. Just do better. You know better. You know better. Not to do these things. Not to be this way. And I think about knowing better, and I think about being better, and I think about the ways in which so much of that is trapped in where I come from and is situated in my experience and what I think is better. I remember working for the Ontario Council of Agencies Serving Immigrants and being at a conference where a large group of folks who worked in charities that served newcomers were clearly, the conversation was about the niqab and the wearing of the burqa and France and its laws. And this group of people who had come to the conference were clearly saying that the ban in France was a win for women. That it was a step forward for feminism. And then I sat with Muslim women who had come to that same conference who said that you would deny me the authority to choose for myself is no win. And I realized that my knowing better wasn't any better. Too often I have found myself in communities of people who are just like me, because that's the comfortable place for me to be. To hear people who amplify the things that I believe, who say things to me that I already believe to be true. And I know sometimes that it leads me to thinking that there is one feminism, that there is one right movement for women. This year, the Canadian UU Women's Association offers an International Women's Day theme of, it's simple, we need change now. Globally, women and girls are providing leadership, creating communities for change, and working for compassionate understanding, and we must be with them. The association writes, even as we seek to move out of binary limitations and embrace gender fluidity, we weep at the number of murdered and missing Indigenous women in Canada and the murder, sexual assault, and disregard of women globally. The packet from the association offers a reflection from Kathy Sage, who was my minister in Kingston. I'm going to play you a song that she refers to.
Shut up and smile. Don't spread your lips. I could do that. But no.
Monster, they may run away.
video, that song, they bring me to tears. They speak to me and they sing in me. And yet, I can't help but notice some things about the people singing. That was filmed at the Phoenix Concert Hall, downtown Toronto. It's about a 10-minute walk from St. Jamestown, the highest density residential community of immigrants in North America. It's not even 5 minutes from the Native Women's Resource Center. In the most ethnically diverse city in the world, singing for women's rights was an overwhelmingly white women's activity. And probably for some guys wearing t-shirts like mine. Kathy Sage writes, "While that song keeps echoing in my ear, the one word that has shaped my reflection this year is intersectionality. It helps me to honor my story and opens me to your story. To create meaningful change, intersectionality allows me to explore the various identities that make up who I am, and that honesty demands that I listen carefully to the identities of other women. That will take us to a new understanding, allowing us to recognize all of humanity, leaning into a much deeper understanding of intersectional feminism." Kathy offers this definition from Vox magazine. "Intersectionality is a big, controversial word with a simple, tough-to-argue-with meaning. Although intersectionality can be used as a framework for understanding any combination of experiences, you'll most often hear it in the context of feminism, and that's obviously why it's being discussed and debated around the Women's March. Here, it means paying attention to the ways the gender-based discrimination and oppression a woman may experience can be compounded by her race, socioeconomic status, sexual orientation, and more. Intersectionality simply means that there are lots of different parts to womanhood. And those parts, race, gender, sexuality, religion, ability, are not incidental or auxiliary. They matter politically." Reading reports from communities of Indigenous women, of Black women, of Asian women in Canada, there is sometimes an overwhelming sense that they don't feel welcome in mainstream feminism, which too often ignores their intersectional identities. I stand here as a man telling feminism it ought to be better. I find that any time I want to tell something it ought to be better, I'm really talking to myself. What's interesting to me is that most especially in these conversations, these communities of racialized cheat women are talking about how they aren't being heard. I can't keep quiet. It's true. I can't. I'm sure you can't. I'm sure you won't. And I know that I won't either. But sometimes I find myself needing to try. Sometimes I find myself needing to take a step back, to lead not from the front and not from behind, but beside. I appreciate often the lessons that music teaches us, the idea of the rest in music, that we take a pause, that in the middle of a song in four parts, one voice will go quiet to let another be heard, that one voice will add its melody to another, to amplify it, that throughout a song we are constantly moving back and forth between who leads, who follows, and how we stand side by side holding hands. I find that Indigenous women are speaking now, as they have always been, but we are more and better equipped to hear it now. We are more aware. Going back to Toni Morrison, we know better. We know better how to listen and how to hear, and we know that in times past we sometimes weren't listening. And I know that so many times in my past, I haven't been listening. Idle No More, led by women. Black Lives Matter in Toronto, led by women. More and more, I need to expand my scope of where my inspiration comes from, of the people with whom I am in dialogue. I need to hear more voices. I still find myself struggling to find hope when I think about what I'm seeing in the world. But then Morrison's words come back again. I did then what I knew how to do. Now that I know better, I do better. The more exposure I have to others, the more I am able to listen, the more I am able to hear, the more I am able to know better. The more I am exposed to other voices, particularly the voices of marginalized and oppressed peoples, the more I am able to hear not a cry to be helped, but a cry to stand alongside. Not in front, not behind, alongside, holding hands. Lilla Watson, an Indigenous Australian researcher and organizer, was a part of Aboriginal activist groups in Queensland in the 1970s. Out of her work with those groups came the mantra, which you can find on posters all over the place. It says, "If you have come here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together." I know that my liberation is bound up in yours. I know that my liberation is bound up in the communities of women affected on that highway. I know that my son's liberation and freedom come from the work that we will do together. Come. Your liberation is bound with mine. Let us work together. Blessed be. Until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons, we who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Let ours be a community that gathers freedom to it. Let ours be a community that values the worth, the dignity, the spirit, and the lives of every person, of every woman. Let ours be a community that responds when people say they are not being heard, when they are not being believed. Let ours be a community of hope in what we can do together. Blessed be.